Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Third hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on this Monday afternoon, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. We head east. We do that every Monday at this time. We bring in Vince Ferrara at Vince Sports on Twitter, Sports Animal WNML there in Knoxville. And also, he is a new daddy. Yeah, congratulations, Vinny.
Yeah, would you like to clarify that?
Or well, I was going to let you do that.
I was about to say, what, is something I missed?
Yeah, I know. That's why I did. That was a cliffhanger.
Yeah, we got to get to gate two, date two before we work on any marriage. I'm a doggy dad now and got a sweet little princess mini golden doodle. So been waiting for the right one, and she's just awesome. She just so chill and sweet. So yeah, excited about it. Speaking of date two, it's only day two of me being a doggy dad, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll have to chart this to see if just remember the glee in Vince's voice right now. We'll see if that continues as the weeks go along. I don't think there was probably much glee in Jeremy Pruitt's voice after the second half of the game in Athens. What the heck happened in the second half? You talking about a tale of two halves. There you go. That sums up that game in a nutshell.
Yeah, and look, it's when you play good teams and you're inconsistent, eventually they're going to make you pay. And Tennessee has been inconsistent in their first two games. You saw some promise. There were some mistakes, but you get away with those mistakes against the lesser teams. Georgia made them pay. And what do we talk about in terms of the keys going into that game? Turnovers, run the football, end of story.
Yeah.
And Georgia was able to run the ball, though not great, and they stopped Tennessee's run game. They totally dominated the line of scrimmage. And Tennessee turned the ball over three times when they hadn't turned the ball over at all in the first two games, one of only five FBS programs who have done that. And then the penalties was another area too. So you're just asking the better team to run away from you. And it happened. And, you know, a lot of Jeremy Pruitt today, when he was talking about the turnovers and some of the issues they had on offense, he said that they had communication issues on offense where they had problems identifying the Mike linebacker. And you think, identifying the Mike linebacker, that's pretty basic. Quarterbacks have to do that, but it's not always on the quarterback. And he elaborated on that a little bit, you know, center and quarterback. So they all have to kind of work together and then communicate to the backs. He said that on misidentifying the Mike linebacker, it cost them big on at least four plays in the game. So, you know, look, Brandon Kennedy is a 6-year player. Jerry Garantano is a 5th-year player.
Yeah.
Can't happen.
No doubt. No doubt. So our conversations with you leading up to this point on Mondays, there was a lot of high praise for this offensive line. They got blown up on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So who was more at fault for the turnovers, you know, the fumbles and the interceptions in Garantano, or was it the offensive line? Was it more about the quarterback or the offensive line, or was it a little bit of both? I was amazed at, you know, all this praise for this Tennessee offensive line, and they look like five freshmen out there. They got manhandled.
Well, like I mentioned before, it was a step up in competition. There's no doubt about it. And maybe the average fan isn't familiar with Ojulari and some of those guys on that D-line, but they've been really good. And they were a different level of speed and athleticism off the edge. Wanya Morris had a great second game, really struggled. Cade Mays was at right guard for started right guard in the game, but then played right tackle, and he was easily beaten off the edge. I mean, pressure up the middle, off the edges. It was everything to look that way. It was everything. It was Georgia giving looks that the quarterback and the center didn't identify. It's holding on to the football. Some of it is just it's the ball security. And, you know, people talk about how Jerry Garantano wants it so bad that at times he tries to do too much because he wants to be successful. And he's made really good decisions the first couple of weeks, failed some throws, not been perfect, but protected the football. Well, in the second half, all his decision-making went away. I mean, when you're getting pressure in your face and you're going to off your back foot try to throw and hit a guy on a crossing route, don't be a hero. So it was a lot of things. But, yes, the O-line, for the number of five stars that they have in that group, for as well as they played the week before, I mean, great defense or not, that was disappointing, and they need to be much better. So to look that way, Darren, it's all of the above to have that kind
Vince,
of output.
Those tackles were five stars, were they not?
Yeah, they got a bunch of five stars. Darnell Wright, right tackle, five star. Cade Mays, right guard, five star. Trey Smith, left guard, five star. Wanya Morris, left tackle, five star. And obviously Brandon Kennedy is a 6-year player.
Yeah, I mean that's not, like I said, that's not freshman. There's a whole lot of stars. As you know, I get it. It's just a tag, but man, I get it, Georgia's good, but my goodness, I did not expect that. Okay, so with that being said, then how would you rate Garantano's play overall?
Well, obviously not good enough. In the first half, he was efficient. I think he only had two incompletions, protected the football, took advantage of the deep shots and just getting the ball up to Palmer and let him do his thing. Sometimes that's Tennessee's been their best play under Garantano, is let him throw it deep and let the receivers go make a play for you. It was excellent the first half, and it was really bad in the second half. And for this team to take the steps that fans expect, that the program needs, there has to be that improvement. And through two games, when I was asked, is Garantano better? You had to say yes, because he protected the ball better than last year. Well, he reverted back to it this year. And Pruitt was asked in the post game by Jimmy Himes, was there any consideration to make a switch at quarterback? And he said no. He said, look, there's a lot of factors in it. It's not just one person. We got to be better. There's one of the penalties and all the other stuff too. But and he was asked again today, and he said no. He said, Jarrett's our quarterback. Here's the one interesting thing, is that Tennessee scrimmaged with their young players. A lot of guys that missed a ton of time because of contact tracing in preseason practice. They held a young player scrimmage Sunday night, and Harrison Bailey took every snap, all 49 of that scrimmage. And you could potentially read between the lines and say they're trying to fast track them to get them ready. Well, he was probably the one player that was most impacted by missing a lot of time during preseason camp. So it could also be just trying to make up for that lost time. But I think if anyone's going to come in for Garantano, if his struggles continue and turning the football over, I think he's the guy. And I think they do see that he could be the guy to at least come in and take that position. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I thought that was an interesting note, and interesting that they're having this young person scrimmage. But it's for him. Garantano can win a fair amount of games if he just protects the football and makes good decisions. And when you melt down like that, has the domino effect, and you got no shot to beat those teams. And again, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, winless for Pruitt against those three big teams.
Mm. Something else that stood out to me on Saturday is they got nothing on first down plays. So they were starting second and long lot on Saturday. And that just simply – if there you go. If you want to start beating the good teams, you can't put yourself second long, you know, 80% of the time or more throughout the course of a game. They got nothing done on first down. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, and here's another part of that. A lot of times you would say, well, that's because they're conservative just running the ball. No, they just weren't efficient throwing the ball on first down when they did. And I don't think they were honestly committed to the run enough in the first half. I know they were getting stuffed a lot, but that's the kind of thing that could get a residual effect later in the ball game when you run. You're not going to always have the same lack of success in the first quarter versus the fourth quarter. So I didn't think they really gave the run game enough of a shot. And I didn't think they had the variety in the run game as well. I wonder if because of all the complex things that Georgia does defensively, if Tennessee just decided, hey, we have a better chance to just run these basic plays and hope to do them well versus trying to do too much. I thought they'd have a much more diverse game plan and play calling than they did. So I was surprised by that, but absolutely. They were third and long, and Georgia could just pin their ears back. And then when you get behind, I also mentioned as a key part of that game going in, is Tennessee had to play from ahead. Well, they did briefly at the very beginning and start of the third quarter, but just didn't have the distance in the on the scoreboard to force Georgia to play one-dimensional. And obviously things turned quickly there in that third quarter.
We're talking to Vince Ferrara, brought to you by Turner Security, powered by TechCore for all your security and networking needs. All right, multi-part question coming here for you. Henry Tuoto.
Tuoto, yeah.
Thank you. Is the best player on defense right now for the Vols, agree or disagree?
Oh, yeah. It's not close.
Okay, and that leads me into the next part. Who's second and how far is the gap and how big of a problem is that right now for this team?
Well, I think it's a problem. There's been so much inconsistency with everybody else. And, you know, Tuoto was beaten in, I guess it was a second quarter on a play in the middle where he took a wrong step to the outside and got beat inside and set up a Georgia score. But outside of that, he was fantastic, and he always is. Everybody else is at issues. Guys getting beaten, guys not getting off the blocks, just, you know, Banks and Crouch. Those guys, especially Banks, good in run defense, put them out in coverage, and teams have been picking on them, then they get beat. The slot position continues to be an issue. Tennessee given so much up to that slot receiver, and teams know it. Bryce Thompson, this is the first game he played some corner. He probably has the next best potential, but even he hasn't exactly been perfect, and he hasn't been fully healthy either. So he's probably the next guy, I would say. But, man, everybody else has been up and down. Maybe Kevon Bennett is next on that list. I guess DeAndre Johnson, but he had that terrible targeting call. He had 3.5 sacks coming into the game, but it's not like he's been perfect either. They don't have any other stars on that defense, and that is an issue for them.
Is that something that you see possibly being improved before the season's over? Or is that going to be a problem that's going to haunt them the rest of the way?
Well, I think it is. What I'll say more than an issue, I'd say it will limit what they can be this year. Because I think potentially they could have some from their freshman class, like a Keyshawn Lawrence, you know, Tyler Barron at one of those outside linebacker spots has played a little bit, and he's flashed. Morgan Joseph's another guy that flashes, but then those guys make freshman mistakes as well. So maybe somebody can develop into a star, but to expect that out of the gate as freshmen is tough. You know, Lawrence hasn't gotten on the field really on defense yet, even though Pruitt was very complimentary of him last week. So I just think the other guys are hard workers, effort guys, guys that just haven't been able to put it all together and be elite. They have a lot of good players that can vary in how much above average they are. And when collectively they're good, then the defense can be pretty good. But I don't think there are other stars on that defense that you're going to see change this D this year, maybe down the road, but not yet.
We saw the Lane train and Ole Miss give Alabama a game. It was a fun game, but Alabama is a team that knows how to finish. Georgia, you could say the same thing in the first half. Tennessee gave them a game. Georgia is a team that knows how to finish. But what did you see out of Georgia that makes you think they can go into Tuscaloosa and get it done against Alabama?
Well, the fact that they're better than Ole Miss overall. So, you know, maybe it won't be that kind of game. Georgia, I don't think, can score that prolifically like an Ole Miss. But because they have the defense they do, I think it would be a different kind of game. And then, you know, Alabama's margin of error shrinks a little bit. And so I just think it would be a different game that they'd be able to play. But I still, even though Georgia's so good defensively, I don't think Bennett is a championship type of quarterback. I don't think their running backs are as good. They don't have those explosive to the house runs that they used to have with Chubb and Swift. Those guys just aren't as good, and honestly, I think their O-line has been better the last couple of years. It's just the defense has made up for it some, but it's 2020 in college football. There's been a ton of surprises, so I think Georgia would have a shot against Alabama in a different kind of game, but I don't know top to bottom that they're better than them, but that doesn't have to be the case in 2020 in college football.
Alabama is 6-point favorite over Georgia.
And speaking of 6-point favorites, Tennessee appears to be about a 6-point favorite over Kentucky. And Vince, I think you laid it out well, trying to gauge what we've seen after 3 weeks of play. It was certainly entertaining. So many games coming right down to the wire. So let's get to Kentucky. I would have found it unfathomable that Mississippi State could roll up the kind of numbers they did at LSU and then come up with 2 points against Kentucky. So give us your thoughts on 1-2 Kentucky. How would you lay out the matchup?
Well, I remember when we were talking about what to expect from the college football season, one of the things that I was adamant about is week to week, we're going to see one team look one way 1 week and then look totally different the next. And we're seeing that. But Mike Leach, now that's 2 eggs laid after their LSU win. And maybe that LSU win wasn't as impressive now that we've seen LSU. But still, for them to put up those kind of yards, I think Kentucky had the really bad call at the goal line against Auburn and didn't really recover from it. And then obviously the missed PAT against Ole Miss. I picked Kentucky to win that game and bounce back. I didn't give up on them, after their tough 0-2 start. I still think they're pretty good at the line of scrimmage. They can run the ball. They do it with a lot of different types of runs, something that Tennessee has not been very diverse at. They are very diverse in how they run the ball. The quarterback runs the ball. So I think they do some things that challenge Tennessee. They don't really throw it prolifically, so they can't take advantage of that against Tennessee secondary that's been iffy. And then Tennessee just they Garantano and that offensive line, they got to be better. And if they're not, then they can get beat at home. And then you're looking at a losing streak and where the season is going, because then you have Alabama next week. So I think the line actually is a little bit high. I want to see how Tennessee responds this week if this gets their attention. But to me, it's about the line of scrimmage and the quarterback. And I don't know that recipe is going to be that different, regardless of how different the opponents are the rest of the way.
You had, and I was actually listening to Tennessee's broadcast at the time, and they referred to some social media and the SEC talking about the crowds at the Georgia game needing to be dispersed better, separated, socially distanced better. I'm curious, as Tennessee gets ready for their next home game, I'm sure the question will come up, what's the right amount of fans? Will there be more fans this time? What about their system of executing it safely? Because you had Dan Mullen come out
after the game. Yeah.
And, of course, he's influenced because Texas A&M did have some fans there, and they made some noise. They lose. And so fresh off of that, he's saying, I want a full stadium. You also have the commissioner coming out last week and saying, hey, stay on these protocols. They're important, all of these things. So what's the answer to the question as they get ready to play a home football game this week?
Well, I think Mullen was pointing to the rules being different in the state of Florida, but the SEC still has their guidelines also. So I don't think the SEC is going to say Florida can have 90,000, but everybody else, you got to stay at 25%. And there's been variation in it. I'm not saying that they're mandating a certain number, but I don't think they would encourage that. So I think that Tennessee will probably do what they did the first game. I don't know that they would adjust it. There's so much politics involved and stuff like that also. So I don't know what the plan is. The only thing about the game, the specifics outside the field that Pruitt talked about today, going to wear those black jerseys that he had mentioned they would in the off season. And the reason for it appears to be Nike, because he said they had planned to, the players wanted to raise money for local organizations. And because of contracts, he said, or contractual things, they're not able to do it. But he said Nike is in the future, and it's something that the players want. But they'll do other things to try to raise money for those local organizations in this game. So that's the only thing he talked about. And honestly, I don't know that he would go down that route that Mullen did and get on that limb and said, we need a full packed house. He wouldn't do it strongly. He might do it subtly and kind of floating it out there.
My last one is another sort of league-wide issue that came up, and we've discussed this in past years. The SEC coming forward with their explanation of what was a pretty controversial call at the end of the Auburn-Arkansas game, where if people missed it, and it's Taylor Zarzor, who's got Nashville ties, actually I thought said it very well during the broadcast. He goes, I don't know if I've ever seen, I've seen a lot of plays where a quarterback tries to spike the ball, but I don't think I've ever seen it before where a guy juggles it, picks it up, and then spikes it, and in doing so spikes it backwards. I did not think that the league's explanation made any sense. I can see why Arkansas is beside themselves. I thought Auburn got almost a gift to be able to attempt the game-winning field goal, and to their credit, they made it. But that was a bizarre ending right there, and I don't get the explanation.
No, I heard the explanation as well. It's basically the circumstances of the play forced them to stay with the call that they had. So it doesn't surprise me that they had that kind. They came out and made a statement trying to defend it with those kind of specifics. But look, Auburn now has been the beneficiary of two huge calls this year, two of the bigger calls of the season, because if Kentucky gets in when their running back was clearly in that game, and who knows what happens after that, but I mean, maybe that's the difference in that game as well. So, Auburn's benefited from it a couple of times, but I thought it was a terribly handled call. And once you fumble it, it's a backwards pass in the way he executed it. So just not very well done, but it's also not shocking.
Tennessee and Kentucky at Neyland Stadium Saturday, 11 a.m. Central Time kickoff. So noon there where Vince is. Vols favored by 6. Of course, the big tilt is Saturday night. It's a 7 o'clock start on CBS, and it'll have Georgia pinned up against Alabama. Good stuff as always here on these Mondays. Vince Ferrara brought to you by Turner Security, powered by TechCore for all your security and networking needs. Vince, thanks for the visit as always. You have a great week, and congratulations again, Dad.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Have a great week.
Vince Ferrara, WNML, there in Knoxville at Vince Sports. And when I say dad, he just adopted a new puppy. Well, a dog that's 4 years old. So he's got himself a new friend at the house. So that is really cool.
I like right? it.
Yeah. We'll come back. More on the other side. By the way, new Predator Nick Cousins will be, not Kirk, but Nick, at 1 o'clock. Right now I want to talk to you about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. And I've been talking to you about them for years because I've been going there for years, and a lot of you have been going there for years because they've been in this market since 2007, helping a lot of people in Middle Tennessee improve their quality of life. And who doesn't want that as we all get older? And they house so many things under one roof. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is the board-certified physician over there. His wife, Daphne, is the registered nurse. And their experienced staff want to help you with so many things, whether it's hormone replacement therapy. Maybe you've been feeling sluggish lately. You've been feeling off. You haven't felt yourself. Get in there. Get your levels checked. See what they can do for you. It's a can change everything. And by the way, it's only natural as we get older sometimes for your levels to drop. And so you don't feel like you did in your 20s. And that's okay. They can help you in that department. Face and body rejuvenation, weight loss management, which is critical this time, right? In the middle, in 2020, in a pandemic, maybe you've been thrown off by your schedule. Everything has been off in 2020, and your just workout routine has gone by the wayside. You've tacked on a couple pounds that you would like to get rid of. Well, they've got programs and people that can get you headed in the right direction. If you need to schedule a consultation or an appointment, pick up the phone and dial this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can always learn everything about them by going to their website, coolspringsmd.com. Nashville SC will take on the Houston Dynamo this Wednesday at 7 p.m. You can catch all the action on ESPN 94.9, starting with pregame coverage at 6:45. Nashville SC dropping a contest to Sporting KC. So Kansas City, they fall 2-1. What was that last night?
Yep.
2-1 to Kansas City.
Yeah, that was a tough one. They had the lead. They scored first, and then KC came back. Tied it up and then got the there was you talk about a goal that you deserve.
Yeah.
KC had a highlight goal.
It was pretty nasty.
And it had to be so perfect for them to pull that off, but did that, and I looked at the guys and we were all like, you kind of got to give them that one. They deserved that. So it obviously now with the season winding down, for this team to make the playoffs, they gotta start getting some wins. They've had a lot of draws as of late, but got to get those 3 points.
What, they have 18 points on the year?
Yep.
Kansas City's got 29. So, how many more games do they have left?
Let me look at it real fast. I think. Let's see. 1, 2, 3. 7 more.
Seven more.
And that includes the, on November 4th, that includes that FC Dallas game that was actually going to be part of the, they were going to do a 3-game series because they both missed the MLS's back tournament. So.
Right.
So that's a part of it too at Nissan Stadium. So it's winding down the
it
first season.
It is winding down. It is, the middle of October. So that tends to happen. So we'll see. They're going to need to collect some points these final matches. Tonight it's the Saints and the Chargers, and as of right now, still haven't seen anything on the Titans yet, anything about today. And I guess no news is good news, but also just like, what are they doing? Like, there's no word on anything right now. So as of now, you could say their contest against Buffalo is on for tomorrow night at 6 o'clock.
And that is, I think what they're using there is it's typically a non-media day the day before a game on Saturday.
Yep.
And if you look at their timeline of communication, when they came out with the the email that said, okay, here's what the deal is on Saturday. No, I'm sorry, on Sunday, they said Monday would be no media. So I guess that gives them the ability to say this is what we've planned to do all along, because they don't typically have media the day before a game. But this is an unusual circumstance. I still would love to hear a clarification of what the heck happened yesterday, because it was confusing.
The only thing I can tell you right now about them, the Tennessee Titans are a professional American football team based in Nashville, Tennessee. That's all I got. That's where we're at this point. And I'm with Willie. I wish the NFL would say something or allow the Titans to give a little more clarification.
Or a joint statement, something. That just spells out, especially for the benefit of those that cover the team.
Right.
They got left in the dark yesterday of why there was practice. They haven't been given an explanation.
Yeah, so
I think we're all trying to be responsible and
it's
be able to understand and educate ourselves about what the process is with, you know, when there's a positive test, what do we do? Right now it's just very confusing.
And if you read the stuff this week, or well, not this week, I guess it would have been last week, it seems like the Bills are going to have a little motivation, because they seem, or at least they're portraying publicly, that they're angry about this, you know, which is kind of silly considering, you know, like what? You thought everything was just going to be peachy and whatever it says on the schedule, that's when you were going to play. But they do seem like a team that's coming in a little bit, a little extra oomph behind them. They are a 3.5-point favorite, which I think, quite honestly, is low considering, you know, the players that will probably be missing and out of the lineup for the Titans. I thought it would be more like 6, maybe even a touchdown.
I am really puzzled why there is even a line until we know who can play for the Titans.
But let me say this about the Bills. I understand that, yeah, this is going to be a weird year and you couldn't, you know, everything was in pencil. But I understand the frustration. Are you playing Tuesday or are you playing Thursday? And if you're playing Tuesday, that means you're playing Sunday. You know, when do you start? When are you allowed to start getting ready for the Chiefs?
Well, aren't they playing? Didn't they get pushed to Monday?
Or Monday, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's changed so much. But I get that, because there was, as of yesterday, okay, there's another positive test. So what are we doing? Are we getting ready for the Titans, or are we just moving that game and getting ready for the Chiefs? So it is what it is. It's 2020. You have to just power through it. But I'm not going to sit there and go, yeah, they're not allowed to be frustrated. I get it. Now, how some of the Steelers players acted and going on social media, that I'm not going to give a pass.
Frustrated is one thing, but they have to understand that this could happen to them down the road, right?
Sure.
If they're sitting all there saying, well, this could never happen to us, I just think that's not a smart way to go about it. But they are being inconvenienced. The routine has been thrown off. I agree. But I'd certainly rather be the Bills than the Titans for this game. Because the Titans, as I've said before, I still would love to know, can you tell me another situation where a team took that many days away from their facility? And I realize they could meet remotely, right? They had the Zoom meetings, they had all that stuff, but physically not be able to go to your facilities to practice together, to get your conditioning in, and the compromise of all the players that will not be able to play tomorrow. Has there ever been a more compromising situation for a team? I would like to know.
Well, I think you kind of know your answer, right? I mean, I don't think you have to dig too deep.
But Vegas is smart, right? When they put out a line, it's not haphazardly. So why are they not considering that more, like for the 3.5? That is amazing to me.
Well, I mean, they are two undefeated teams. The Titans are the home team. They are going to have fans in the stands. So, I mean, there are factors that do help the Titans. But, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think the line is
I forgot
low.
They're even having fans. this has been so crazy. I forgot
all about
that.
There's going to be fans in the stands. And they are the home team. And they are undefeated. So, yes, there's all these other circumstances. They may be missing this person and this person and this person. They haven't done this in the last 2 weeks. But They are undefeated, and they are at home, and so that does factor in the NFL. I still think the line is low. I thought the line would be more like about six. But
well, according
we'll
to Vegas Insider, it opened at 6.5, Buffalo. That's really? Kind of where I thought it would be. Hmm. Now, I know a lot of books.
It went down to 3.5?
According to VegasInsider.com. Now, a lot of books I know took it off the board completely, which was, in my opinion, the right thing to do. So
took it off the board when?
During
last
all
week?
During yeah. all of this.
Yeah, yeah, there wasn't a line last week, but yeah. there is today.
Right.
There wasn't a line last week.
Did the line was there a line yesterday? I didn't even look yesterday. Did they put it on yesterday?
It may have either popped up sometime yesterday or the first thing this morning, overnight or whatever.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a line last week, just like there wasn't one on the Patriots game.
The over-under on Vegas Insider is 53. I think I'd take the under.
Yeah, that's high. That's high.
That's very high.
By the way, something we've talked about a lot, and I saw it yesterday in one of the pregame shows, just to see it again, it is amazing because you've heard me bring this up before with Tim Hasselbeck or others, or we've talked about it. You know, why is scoring up so much? Do you think it's because, you know, a little work, blah, 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 for defenses, this and that? It goes back to penalties are way down, okay? The offensive holding penalties are way, way down compared to years past. Offensive pass interference, way down. Defensive pass interference, up. So PI on the defense is up. On the offense is way down. And holding is way down.
So by that.
So all that helps who? The offense.
It helps the offense. That was my next question. Do you have any numbers? Because I don't have any in front of me. Is scoring up?
Yeah. Oh, way up. Way up. Yes.
Overall. Okay.
Yes. Way up.
Do we?
And a lot of people have accounted, like I said, they've accounted that for just the weird off season, this and that. But right now, the obvious direction to start with, there are many factors, but the obvious is right there. I mean, they're letting are you telling me just the offensive line is that much more disciplined this year than in years past? With less work, they're more disciplined? No. No, they're not. I think the league has just made a conscious effort to tell these officials, hey, keep the flag in your pocket a little bit more. We need
let
you
them play.
Not to call
and they're
let
already,
them play. Yeah.
They're already inconsistent.
Let them play. And so they're not calling holding penalties. They're not calling offensive pass interference. And they're calling more pass interference on the defense.
Are sacks down? That's another question I would want to know.
That's
put
a
good up, question.
I haven't seen any numbers on that. I would say my guess is sacks are down. If you're letting guys get away with more and you're not calling holding penalties, my guess is sacks are down.
Is the theory maybe to protect quarterbacks, to maybe allow a little less? I understand holding can happen on a running play just as easy as on a pass protection, but is it just try to juice up offense, or is it they think maybe this would lead to less injuries if you allow
really
the offensive line a little bit more leeway?
It's a really good question. I don't know.
The offensive pass interference compared to defense, that's a mystery to me. I don't know why that would be.
Yeah.
I don't know why that would be a league thing. Give a little more leeway to the offense. It's not like there hasn't been. There's been some offensive pass interferences.
There have, but it's called. Way down.
Wow.
I know. Like that's typically a call you're not really, you know, when you think pass interference, you usually always think it's on the defense.
Defense, yeah.
But they've got the numbers to prove that the offensive pass, PIs are way, way down than years past through the 5 weeks.
Hmm. Interesting.
Once again, I don't think it's more discipline on the offensive side of the ball than the defense. I just, for whatever reason, they're not calling as many penalties overall, and they're letting guys get away with a little bit more, letting them play. Well, as you said, let them play.
And I would think with the way the offseason was that that would hurt defenses more than offenses because there's a lot of – because you have teams that run different offenses and there's scheming and different packages. And so I would think that the benefit of the offense – plus people want to see scoring. That's just – that's going to get people tuning in more. But I wonder if that all factors into it.
How do you think – or do you think that they will take the proper steps down the road, way down the road, and factor in how everything has been skewed for offense? Everything benefits offense for the most part. And down the road, when you look at numbers, you know, we already know that you have to be able to factor in decades and what was going on in that decade of football. I wonder if they'll factor in that scoring was way up. They let everything was skewed to help offenses, and that we shouldn't be wowed as much by their numbers as opposed to other decades.
Hmm. Meaning if a guy throws 60 touchdown passes or something.
Or 5,000 yards like every year and 50 touchdowns. I mean, yeah, we just don't. Where in years 15 years ago, you're blown away. Like that season alone, Mahomes could almost get him into the Hall of Fame, right? It's like, whoa!
Oh,
my goodness.
Well, if you, for example, look up the passing numbers of Terry Bradshaw or Ken Stabler or pick whoever you thought were the best quarterbacks of the 1970s. You know, you sometimes you're looking at even a Joe Namath, right? You're like, what? Those are the numbers? Because it's not even close to what numbers look like today for even Kirk Cousins' numbers would look great alongside of Terry Bradshaw's. It was just a different game. It's a totally different game.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, I mean,
those were the best quarterbacks in the game during that era, but it was just statistically a different game. People went about it different. The rules were different. And as a result, the stats are way different.
I mean, Bradshaw's completion percentage in his career was 51.9.
Now, if you had a guy completing 51.9, there's no way he could be your starter.
Right, but think about what defenses were allowed to do back then.
That's my point. That's my point.
Basically, they could do
and
whatever
it's the same
they
thing.
Wanted to.
I think defensive coordinators, and I think college people would agree. In fact, you remember Bob Shoup had this conversation with you and I, Darren, one of those weeks where we were going in there and taping interviews with him while he and James Franklin were doing their thing. He asked the question one day, like they were getting ready to play, I think, Johnny Manziel or somebody like that. And he was like, What does it mean to be good defense now? I think the NFL, you can ask that, right? Nobody's going to be like the steel curtain back then because the rules are different. You just can't. So one of the best defenses of its time today statistically will look a lot different than it did back then. Just like the flip side is true, what we're talking about offensively.
I don't know if you guys talked about it on Friday's show, but there was a hit Thursday night, and luckily – they went and they came back with the right call, and I think it was the Bears, and maybe it was Fuller. I don't remember who it was. But, I mean, it was your classic textbook, what you're supposed to do. That, you know, especially in today's game, the hit on, and I don't remember who it was. I don't know if it was Evans or who it was for Tampa. And at first, they were going to call it a penalty, and they did the right thing. They huddled. They talked about it, and they came back and said it was not a foul. But that it's like anything that you go, whoa, and then when they slowed it down and showed the replay several times while they were talking about it, it's like that's exactly what they want you to do, but yet their instincts were to call that a penalty because that's what they've been trained, right? It's like now anything that's anything, oh, it's got to be a penalty where, you know, back to what we're talking about. Back in the day, I mean, that would never. It's just boom. It's John Madden going boom, and that's all we knew, right? That's just a classic football game. Where today, it's immediate. Like you just think, oh, that's a penalty, and then they show the replay. textbook hit. But and luckily for them, it didn't cost the Bears, because at first they were going to call it a penalty, and they did the right thing. Yeah. They talked it over, and they came back and said it wasn't a foul.
I feel like there's been more of that, too, that the officials have been on some things. Like, they'll huddle up and get together and say, okay, you called this. What did you see? And then the other guy, well, I saw it, and I saw it this way. And that's how it should be, you know, rather than going, you know, if you going under the hood every time. But just getting together and talking about it, I think, is that's progress.
We've come a long way. You know what comes to mind, too, is we're having this discussion. Remember how the league used to market the crunching hits, right? They, like, you wanted to be the guy that had the reputation of, hey, don't go over the middle against this guy. It just shows you how the game has evolved, and therefore putting up the big offensive numbers, I agree with you 100% there, and has to be put in perspective, right? Because they used to have the tapes that you could buy or from NFL films, crunching hits. You know, remember we used to make fun of the Al Davis, the opposing team's quarterback, must go down. Remember that?
Yeah, but then they
determined. And now you never see that anymore. They don't
know more
anymore.
About concussions.
100%. So it doesn't mean it's bad, but it does change the stats. It changes the game.
They know more about concussions, and then Bounty Gate changed a lot of that, you know, because a team got caught, but I think everybody knew that there was a lot of still that old school mentality of, you know, knock them out, take them out.
So 1,000 yards receiving today doesn't mean the same thing as 1,000 yards from, let's say, 1970 to 1990, right?
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
It evolves into a different thing.
What's the new standard? Like, 1,000 yards receiving is not – it can't be the new standard. That's the old standard. I don't think it can be that way for rushing. I don't think it can be that way for receiving. 3,000 yards, even 4,000 yards is not the standard for quarterbacks. I mean – What are the new markers considering what they're allowed to do now?
I think it's up to the writers and the people. When you're trying to judge things like the Hall of Fame and the best people of their time and all pro teams compared to before, I think you just have to try to make adjustments as much as you can in your mind. And then I guess analytics would be another part of the answer, right?
Yeah, well... And I think this is interesting, too, and I apologize to the person that quote-tweeted this, because I was just glancing earlier. But we always say the GOAT, like that guy's the GOAT, the greatest of all time. But it should be GOAT, G-O-T-E, the greatest of the era. And I think that applies even more with some of these rule changes and what we're talking about.
We're also hearing this conversation with LeBron versus Michael
Jordan.
Yeah, I would like for us to do that. It's the same thing.
Yes, agreed. I would like for us to start doing that rather than the always trying to do the, you know, who was the best of all. Just say who was the best in their era. That is the way to do it, in my opinion. I hate today the whole LeBron versus it. It's just like, oh, eye roll. Insert eye roll. Here we go again. Like, really? Why can't Michael Jordan just be the greatest when he played and LeBron is the greatest when he played? I mean, what?
It's a different NBA.
Right.
Why
can't we just do that? It's just like any other sport, because as we've talked about many, many times on the show, everything changes. Nothing stays the same. And the game changes. There's rules to change. The decades change. And so how can you possibly – are they both playing with the same, you know, level playing field, both the same set of rules, the same circumstances, same – no. So why can't we just say they were the best when they played and they were the best when they played, rather than always trying to pin them up against each other and truly decide who was better?
It'll never stop happening, though. That's what makes shows like ours fun, right? To try to
they're June
try to put it all together.
I mean, but you gave the record, LeBron's finals record, 4-6, and everybody go, oh, well, Jordan was 6-0. Completely different NBA. Completely different. I mean,
Maybe he gets to 10 in today's game, though. I mean, I guess that's the counter for Michael Jordan. Okay, well, if they had all these. The rules and what players are able to do today, and the way the game's set up, maybe Michael Jordan gets to 10 NBA finals. But, I mean, also on the same token, when all the people say 6-0, 6-0, 6-0, okay, yeah, but don't you get credit for going to the finals for 10 times?
Yeah. And who
10
are your,
times?
Who are your teammates compared to
right.
the other guy? I mean, there's a lot of things to go into, which makes it fun.
Yeah.
But the game, when you look at just points per game, is kind of where I was thinking, or if you're just judging by the stats.
Look at the points per game now compared sure. to Jordan's
completely.
Era.
It's the game has really evolved into something different. The way people use the three-point line, the way players are used, there's not the big guys in the middle anymore. There's less contact being allowed. It is very, very different. And that would affect LeBron's way of – I think both would be the greatest of their era. Right? But it just changes the stats.
Yep. We'll come back with newest Predator Nick Cousins to kick off the final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.